I am Reese Tisdale, and this is The Future of Water, in which we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. This is episode 55, and summer is here in Boston. I say this because temperatures finally dropped below 90 degrees, and it's feeling a bit more normal these days. So, hey, that's a good thing, despite having already lost an hour and a half of daylight since the summer solstice. Today, I'm going to be joined by my colleague in Chicago, Eric Bindler, to talk about the role of engineering firms in digital water. Given that at the time of this recording or release, we are about to put out an in-depth analysis of the competitive landscape for, I think it's around 20 or so engineering firms globally that are active in digital water. And I thought now would be a great time to tap Eric for some highlights and his perspectives on what's happening, because really since we put out our last report several years ago, there's been a fair amount of M&A plus, you know, spinoffs from engineering firms and so on and so forth. So I'm not going to lie, the Future Water episodes with Eric are always pretty good and they do well as far as downloads go. So, you know, mostly because he knows so much about the digital water landscape. So if you're interested in digital water, you're in the right place. But before we begin, I wanted to share a couple things with you. Apropos Eric Bindler, he's just been named to the SWAN, which is the Smart Water Networks Forum Council. Not only are we impressed by Eric, we're super happy that he's working with SWAN, which has really done some incredible work and done a great job in building out its own organization and leadership in digital water. Alongside Eric, we continue to look forward to working with SWAN and advance smart water globally. And if you're interested in conferences and a great network of people to work with, SWAN is it in digital water globally. So give it a look. Secondly, if you know anyone looking to take on a leadership role in water, I encourage you to check out Bluefield Research's careers page. We are hiring. We're looking for more people. We usually are. We're a growth company, and we've got some interesting roles out there. Positions listed range from digital water, which we'll get into in a minute. So maybe that's a good primer, but also industrial and municipal, as well as some other consulting position. So if you're not interested in that, share it with a friend. But without further ado, let's bring in Eric to talk about digital water. All right. So I'm joined here by Eric Bindler. Eric, how are things?
Everything's going well. Yeah. Just getting ready for the weekend. You know, I'm not supposed to talk about the weather, but it is beautiful here in Chicago. So
and it's also Thursday, so the weekend's not here, just as a reminder.
It's getting close.
It's getting closer, exactly. And then, I mean, as of this morning, you've got a new office opening up in Chicago, or at least some space. So anybody who's interested to see Eric in Chicago inside the loop, he'll be around.
Right across from the Willis/Sears Tower. So it's very exciting.
Excellent. Well, look, Eric, as I sort of gave everybody a heads up on the intro to this episode, there's a lot happening in digital water. Obviously, that's the space in which you manage for Bluefield. You're intimately involved in it. In fact, you've just put out a global forecast earlier in the summer and had great feedback on that. And what I'd like to do is maybe use that as sort of an entree into the role of engineering firms in the digital water sector, because there's a lot of activity happening there. But what I'd like to do a little bit is, like sometimes we do, is frame the house, like talk a little bit, at least more broadly, about what is digital water and or what's the size of the market and sort of what trends are we seeing? And maybe if you could think about that in the context of engineering firms, and then we can dive into what they're up to. How's that sound to you?
Yeah, that sounds great. So yeah, just to set the stage a little bit, I mean, as you said, we did the global digital water forecast a couple months back, just some headline numbers. I mean, we saw about $26 billion kind of annual market size in 2021. We're projecting that's going to grow to about $55 billion in 2030. It's close to a 9% compound annual growth rate, about $388 billion over the decade. So, you know, significant market. I mean, in comparison to the kind of the broader global municipal water and wastewater industry or market there, you know, it is still a relatively small piece, but it's a very fast growing piece. It's, you know, an area that a lot of firms from all across the value chain, all across the industry are really eyeing as a kind of a growth area. And we certainly agree. And I think what's interesting, I mean, one of the things that I think we kind of knew it, but it really put it in perspective, putting these numbers together, was just how fragmented, how diverse the market is. You know, we looked in particular at about 45 key countries around the world, you know, throughout the Americas, throughout Europe, throughout Asia, throughout the Middle East. And within those countries, there's about 400,000 different water, wastewater, stormwater utilities that we identified, and just really, really different kind of demand profile depending on where you go, right? You've got larger, more mature providers in more typically in more developed countries that are really at the forefront of investing in all the really interesting kind of cutting edge digital technology that we talk about, like artificial intelligence or robotics or the Internet of Things, really kind of that very futuristic kind of cutting edge approaches to monitoring assets, to optimizing processes, to maximizing efficiency, to really relying on data to just make better decisions about assets, about operations, about customers. But the vast majority of the market, you know, 98-99% of the utilities out there are still in the much earlier stages of their digital journeys, if they've even kind of started at all, right? There's a lot of demand still for just very basic low-cost monitoring technology, you know, meters, smart meters, for example, basic asset management, customer management software, whether it be billing or GIS. So still a ton of demand, even in just getting those kind of core systems in place. So I'd say that's maybe the first point I would make to tie this to their discussion about engineering firms. I mean, I think what's interesting is that when people think about the digital water market, I think the first place that you typically go is either hardware or software, right? You're talking about smart meters or sensors, or you're talking about, you know, data visualization software platforms. But if you look at it, the market splits out roughly evenly between hardware, between software, and then between services, right? There's still a significant chunk of that market that's actually going to companies that are helping utilities plan out their kind of technology investments, that kind of technology consulting or digital consulting strategy services, to helping with procurement, right? Helping utilities kind of write their specs and understand exactly, you know, design and engineer the systems and get everything in place, with installation, with actually implementing technology, with training, like all of that kind of professional technology services is a really big share of this market. And people, you know, again, when you think digital, you think kit or you think software, you're not necessarily thinking about the service side of it, but especially in an industry that's so fragmented, you know, most utilities don't have the capacity to kind of do this stuff on their own. They need service providers to come in and actually help them get this stuff up and running. And to some extent, you know, help them figure out what they need to buy in the first place. And that's really where I think we tie the conversation back to the role of these engineering firms.
Yeah. And I think that's it. So that's a great segue, and appreciate that. I think you laid it out nicely. So the services piece is interesting. And I think we even on the Future Water, you and I, and maybe Keith Hayes, I don't remember who else was maybe on it, but we talked a little bit about the cloud, right? There are these new solutions that are enabling new business models or approaches or even market entry for this. And I mean, it's worth stating, you talked about 400,000 water utilities and systems globally that you looked at. But on the other side of that, I mean, we also look at the competitive landscape and the number of vendors we look at that have active positions in digital water is, I mean, we're probably over 1,000 now, maybe 1,100. It's a huge number that we have tracked over time. So to your point about it being fragmented is exactly right. And I think that points to that. So let's talk a little bit about services, because engineering firms, they are what we say the gatekeepers to the water sector. I don't know if they necessarily say that. I don't know if they want to say that, but I can tell you everybody else looks at them as that they play these key roles as guides to utility system design, construction, sort of the, you know, deployment of systems and operations, as well as just planning overall. They really are important to what happens within the municipal water utility and to some extent industrial facilities as well. But like everything else, you know, digital technology is everywhere, to your point, including water. And as such, you know, the engineering firms seem to be changing or adapting to this new environment as well, whether we want to call it the Internet of Things or the digital revolution, you name it. The engineering firms have a stake in this, and it doesn't always necessarily align with their business model that they're so used to, traditional business models, at least in some cases. So why don't we just jump into it? How are engineering firms responding or positioning within this new context?
Yeah. So this is a question that, as you, I think, suggested, it comes up a lot, right? I mean, we work with companies kind of across the industry. We work with a lot of utilities or talk to a lot of utilities, and the role of engineering firms is something that everybody's really interested in, because they do hold that, they kind of hold the keys to the kingdom in a lot of ways in terms of helping utilities decide what they're going to invest in, what they need, and who they're going to partner with from a technology standpoint. So in doing this work, this report that is going to be coming out in the next week or two, it's an update to a report we did in 2020. And basically what we've done is dig in on 20 major global engineering firms that have, you know, significant positions in the water industry, and just try to understand what they're doing about digital. And really what you see is pretty broad range of strategies. I think this is definitely still a market where even the largest firms, the most established firms, are kind of trying to figure it out and figure out what the best strategy is going to be, and how to kind of best position for the changes that are taking place now, but especially that are going to, you know, kind of continue to accelerate over the course of the decade or longer. So at kind of the most basic level, as kind of a starting point, engineering firms pretty much all at this point are using some sort of third-party digital solutions to make their own work, their kind of core engineering work, more efficient, right? So using engineering and design software like, you know, Bentley or Innovyze or Autodesk, right? That's common at this point, that in putting together master plans or you know, capital improvement plans or network models or designing facilities for utilities, they're using the software, right? So that's kind of the entry point in a lot of cases. What we've also seen, though, is that many of these firms are also trying to kind of capitalize on their own gatekeeper role, their kind of domain expertise, their relationships in the industry, by expanding the suite of services that they're offering to include some of those kind of implementation and installation services that I mentioned earlier. So many leading engineering firms also offer SCADA integration services or GIS integration services. They've got big practices built up to help utilities kind of get these systems up and running, to do, you know, the basic kind of data collection and design and kind of, you know, set up an implementation of these systems. So that's really on the kind of the, you know, the engineering firms making use of commercial third-party software and technology. But what I think has been really interesting, the place where we are kind of focused the most, or where we're kind of tracking with the most interest, I would say, would be where, you know, over the past couple of years, we're seeing some of these leading engineering firms really building up their own IP, right? I think a lot of cases, these come from just, you know, doing a one-off project, a one-off client engagement, where the client asks for some sort of a custom software application. They ask for some sort of a data dashboard tool. They ask for some sort of optimization that requires the engineering firm to build some sort of, you know, proprietary bespoke algorithm, you know, for optimization for predictive analytics. So over time and over the course of the kind of body of work that they've built up and the body of references they've built up, many of these leading engineering firms have actually built up pretty interesting, pretty unique, you know, software kind of IP or technology IP. And the question really becomes, what can they do to actually kind of extract value out of that? How can they continue to reuse it? How can they commercialize it? How can they provide it to more clients? And at that's the point where we've seen really two significant strategies, two very different mindsets start to kind of emerge across the industry for these players that have kind of a crop of their own IP that they've been working on. So on the one hand, you get the players that really have doubled down on their kind of core services focus, right? Their core service footprint. And typically the idea is to take that IP, to take those unique kind of proprietary tools that they've built, and use those to differentiate or enhance or just sell more of their core services. You know, for like firms like Tetra Tech, Brown and Caldwell, Jacobs have kind of played it more on this side of the house, where in many cases they're actually giving the technology away for free, or they're offering it as kind of an add-on to say, you know, we'll throw this in, you'll get access to this dashboard, or you'll get access to this, you know, digital twin modeling platform as part of kind of a larger design and engineering contract, or maybe you buy that, you will give you the software, but then we highly recommend that you add on some, you know, on-call services hours or whatever the case may be. It's really kind of a, you know, icing on top of the cake in a lot of ways to add value and to kind of build those relationships with their clients. They're not actually selling the software, right? And that's kind of the first approach. The second approach is actually productizing that IP that they've built up over time. And that's where we see firms like Arcadis or Mott MacDonald, CDM Smith, that are actually moving more into that kind of software license sales as a standalone business, as a standalone business model. In some cases, working closely in partnership with, their kind of core engineering colleagues, right? The parent company or the core company. But in other cases, even getting some of that, some independence, getting some separation from that core business, and actually partnering with competitors or trying to sell to competitors, in order to kind of really build up a standalone viable software business that has its own market channels, its own KPIs, and that kind of thing. So that's been a really interesting kind of bifurcation in the industry, and kind of seeing which firms are gravitating more towards one strategy or the other.
Yeah. I mean, and to your latter point about selling to competitors or engineering peers, you know, that was really the Innovi strategy back when they were at MWH, and they were in a way kept at arm's length. So it'll be interesting to see how, for like CDM Smith and Trinex, its new spinoff, new brand for Digital Water, how it positions itself going forward, you know, and to what extent, while there may be collaboration back and forth at some point, depending on its success. Because one of the benefits, I suppose, is and attractive things about Digital Water is margins can be higher for this than, let's say, the billable hour model that they've traditionally followed or approached. So can you talk a little bit about, I mean, you talked about some strategic shifts. You sort of threw out some names out there. And I mentioned Trinex as a spinoff from CDM Smith. I mean, are there other spinouts, or what about just M&A, right? Have we seen firms that are acquiring smaller firms to sort of bolster or strengthen their positions just from other sources?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what's been really interesting about this space as well, is I almost hate to say this, but we put out the first version of this report, the first edition, in, I'd say about this time in 2020. Kind of middle of the year 2020. And I think within a week or two, it was already out of date because Royal Haskoning DHV spun out their digital unit, right? So it was just constant state of flux over the past 2 years since this report's come out. We've seen a lot of new M&A. We've seen a lot of new, whether it be full-on spin-outs of subsidiaries or just kind of, you know, branding of the team within the company that does the digital stuff, right? So it's been interesting to watch that. I mean, just as a couple examples, you mentioned Trinex and CDM Smith. I just mentioned Royal Haskoning DHV. You know, Stantec launched Stantec.io. Tetra Tech launched Tetra Tech Delta. You know, we've seen particularly like Tetra Tech, Jacobs, Royal Haskoning DHV have been pretty acquisitive. You know, Tetra Tech has been buying a bunch of, you know, kind of data management, cybersecurity, and also like federal government contractor types that do, you know, digital services or data management services or you know, AI type work, predictive analytics. Jacobs has been in kind of the same vein, I would say. Arcadis bought a company called Hydronet in the Netherlands a couple of months back, I should say. It does kind of, you know, network operations, network modeling and simulation. And then, of course, you get kind of M&A between larger engineering firms, and in some cases, they're trading some of the some of the digital properties or the digital IP is trading hands. So certainly, Stantec buying Cardno, or the big one that we worked on last year that we wrote I shouldn't say we worked on we wrote a research note about last year was RSK buying up some of Black & Veatch's water businesses, kind of rebranding that under Binny's. And as part of that, they got access to some of the IP that had been developed by Black & Veatch in the UK. Black & Veatch does still own that, but Binny's is kind of using it to sell to utilities in the UK, you know, their EcoX platform and Helix digital twin software and things like that. So there has been a lot of movement. That's one of the things that we're definitely tracking in this new report, is just what are some of those new deals, you know, which players have kind of been rolled up into others, and then the spin out, certainly the kind of new units that have been launched, and what are they? In some cases, they are, you know, full on subsidiaries with their own management, with their own KPIs, with their own teams. In other cases, it's more of kind of a, as I mentioned, a branding exercise, just to kind of give people that awareness that the engineering firm had to kind of a digital component to it, whether they have services, they have, you know, they have IP that they're offering. So, yeah, lots of activity. Definitely check out the report and some of the research notes that we've done, and we go into detail on some of those.
And when we sort of got into this, we were talking about services. Are any sort of, do any of them have hardware that they're developing themselves, or is it mainly just sort of software and or services that they're offering?
It's mainly software and services. I don't think nobody top of mind has like a hardware platform. You do see, I know Jacobs bought a company a couple of years back that's like IoT data management, right? So it's more, again, on kind of the data management, data integration, data visualization, data analytics type side of things. Nobody's coming to mind that has kind of an actual hardware business that they're selling as part of that. I'll think about that. But yeah, I mean, in terms of areas of focus, though, I think it's really interesting to think about the types of solutions that they're offering, because you do get, you know, on the one hand, you get some companies have very clear areas of strength, you know, based on whether acquisitions that they've made, or just kind of what market they're really catering to. Like Arcadis, for example, a lot of the initial acquisitions that they made before they kind of launched Arcadis Gen were in the asset management space. So they bought a company called Seams. They bought a company called Eames Group that were both kind of in that asset management, asset investment planning space. So that's really the focus of a lot of the software that they've launched under Gen. Trinex is another example. You know, they are certainly, CDM Smith is a global company, but Trinex is at this point mainly focused on the US. And so a lot of what they're doing is really tied to the needs of the US utility sector. So there's a strong focus on sewer overflows. There's a strong focus on lead service line management. You know, these are issues that are especially, you know, strong or top of mind within the US utility sector. But there's also some commonalities. I mean, I think you mentioned Innovyze a couple minutes ago, and that was a really unique case, I think partly because it was such an early case, but at this point, most of the engineering firms they're not necessarily trying to offer those core solutions that are going to compete with the kind of commercial technology that's already out there. They're not going to develop their own GIS platform that's going to compete with Esri. At this point, they're not going to develop their own, you know, network modeling or hydraulic modeling platform that's going to compete with Innovyze or Bentley. You know, utilities, that kind of stuff, that those markets are pretty well saturated already. And so what they're trying to do is build software that's going to sit on top of that. They're trying to build these systems that, you know, these kind of, in many cases, using that kind of digital twin concept to say, you know, this is a platform that can sit on top of all of your other siloed software systems and data silos that you have operating across your utility. It can pull data from your SCADA system. It can pull data from your GIS. It can pull data from your hydraulic model. It can pull from your IoT sensors and kind of take all that, bring it all together, integrate it, maybe visualize that for you, give you some kind of analytics, some insights into what's happening within your network. And so that's a pretty common approach in terms of where engineering firms are going. And there's different flavors of that in terms of what specific types of problems they're trying to solve or what those capabilities are. But that seems to be a pretty common type of solution that they're offering. I'd say the other maybe two quick pieces in terms of the services side of things is one of them is cybersecurity, right? That's become, I think, a big it's certainly a big concern for the market. And it's something that we're seeing more engineering firms think about. In particular, as I mentioned, Jacobs and Tetra Tech have both bought up a handful of companies each that are kind of in that cybersecurity, you know, consulting services type of a space. And then just more broadly, kind of digital, what I call digital strategy consulting or change management, where you're basically moving a little bit earlier into the decision-making process to say, hey, you know, this, you know, utility is trying to come up with their 10-year digital transformation roadmap. You know, they need players that can come in and help them say, you know, this is what you have. This is how you're set up now. This is the data that you have. These are the gaps. You know, these are the systems you should be investing in to kind of get where you want to be, and also help with the kind of the human side of things, the culture side of things, just helping utilities and the utility staff really understand what they need to be, what they need to do to be effective kind of data-driven organizations. And so that, you know, it's a little bit more like management consulting, tech consulting type stuff. We're seeing more, you know, companies, more of these engineering firms, you know, kind of doubling down on those types of services as well.
So with all of this happening and everybody's excited about digital, and as easy as it may seem, as the words come out of your mouth, I mean, what challenges do they face? Because that's sort of the other end of the equation that we, when we talk to companies and they're always asking, what are these, you know, even engineering firms come to us and they ask, you know, hey, you know, what are the barriers that we're going to face? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it does sound easy. And I think, you know, engineering firms, as we've kind of talked about, they do have a lot of things going for them in this sense, right? I mean, you know, I think they do typically have really strong client relationships with the utilities that they work with. You know, they have these kind of long-standing relationships. They have this position as kind of trusted advisors, right? They've for so long, they've been the ones advising utilities on what to do, what to invest in, what to buy, what technologies they need, that they have this really, really critical role that can really parlay, I think, well into the digital space. And they just have a, obviously very deep domain expertise in the water sector compared to, you know, a lot of, I think there's maybe at least a stereotype out there of a lot of the kind of digital water startups that maybe are kind of more like Silicon Valley firms, you know, developing some interesting technology, but don't necessarily know the industry that well. You know, engineering firms can tout their kind of industry credentials in a sense, and their knowledge there. But there are challenges, right? I think, you know, as you alluded to earlier, and I didn't want to respond to it because I was saving it for this question, but the business model thing is really tough, right? And kind of business model and product strategy, in the sense that, you know, engineering firms, you know, very much the model is it's a time and materials based or billable hours based contract. You know, they're typically the common pattern is kind of one-off, very capital intensive projects. And you know, you're typically dealing with very bespoke individual projects, that, you know, you do them and then you're done. There's not necessarily that ongoing support. They're really capital light in that sense, right? You're kind of most of the business is in the people, it's in the expertise. You're not necessarily investing in or developing or supporting a product, right? When you compare that to a software company, you know, again, very different business model. You're talking about typically perpetual software licenses or software as a services contracts. So they're much longer relationships. They're meant to be kind of stickier contracts, recurring revenue model. And the products are much more, they're not meant to be, you know, in the ideal world from a software perspective, you're selling highly standardized, highly productized, you know, pieces of software with, you know, zero to no marginal cost to reproduce. They're very capital intensive. You have to continue to update them. You have to continue to invest in them to support them, you know, invest in security. These are all things that are not very common for an engineering firm. So when they're trying to kind of move into that software space, it's kind of a new ballgame in that sense. And obviously that also requires new skill sets, right? You need different types of people to develop those products, different types of people to sell those products, different types of people to manage those teams. And I think that really has been, at least recently, the biggest sticking point and something that's been actually really fascinating in kind of revisiting this topic 2 years later to kind of understand where everybody is and what's changed and what really hasn't changed since 2020 when we did the first version of this report. You know, we've talked a lot about the staffing and the labor issues in the industry, and kind of in the economy as a whole, right? The kind of tight labor market, the great resignation, so many people changing jobs, so much turnover, and certainly this has been a case for engineering firms as well. And now not only are they competing against each other for engineering professionals, but they're also competing against, if they're trying to develop a digital business and they're trying to develop software, you know, they're competing against the likes of Google or Amazon or big financial companies or big healthcare companies to try to get that talent that they need. And I think it's been really hard to do. You know, like we actually talked to at least one engineering firm that, you know, when I talked to them 2 years ago, they were in the exact same spot in terms of plans to get into digital water, but no real success yet because they just haven't been able to hire anybody. They haven't been able to attract the people that they need to do that because the labor market has been so tough to navigate. And so I think that's, again, it's a really interesting place where the market is, the demand for digital water is just is really, really growing significantly coming out of the pandemic. But the supply, both from a, you know, a physical kind of equipment supply chain perspective and from kind of a talent and staff capacity perspective on the services side, they're not able to meet it. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that continues to play out, you know, over the next couple of years.
And also costly. I mean, you know, it's not just talent itself, those who can, you know, perform the needed actions or activities, but also just to support the businesses, but also data is a high demand. So therefore it's expensive. And I think, you know, I know we've talked to utilities that have said they themselves are having trouble, you know, engineering firms are in the same boat, you know, it's all relative, right? And so these days it's been pretty expensive. So yeah, I think that is kind of the interesting part as they figure out. And I think on the vendor side, you know, and I know some of these, they may be technology agnostic or not. And I know they partner with other vendors at times. And I know the vendor side of the equation, they're always sort of, I think they're having their ongoing debates about what their relationship with the engineering firm should be. Should one, they just try to really facilitate and incubate a really strong partnership with these strong engineering firms, or should they try to do an end around to go directly to utilities? And if they do that, then they have to have the boots on the ground, but they also have to kind of break through. And that's not always the easiest exercise. Like to your earlier point, these engineering firms have strong, long-lasting relationships with a lot of these utilities. So that makes it a pretty high hurdle to overcome if you're going directly to the utility itself. So in brief, any thoughts on how this might play out? Where do we see the market going, whether it be through consolidation or other movements in one direction or another? Any thoughts? And maybe it varies globally.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll throw out a couple things. One of the first things that comes to mind is just when we talk to people about this, the you know, and especially I think I mentioned earlier on the kind of two different strategies that we're seeing for some of the leading players in terms of commercializing or kind of getting value from their own IP. The question comes up, like, which one of those strategies is working, right? Which one is more, has more scale? Which one is more profitable at this point? And I think it's just, it's still so early for us to really understand how well these companies are doing in the market. Like, you know, Arcadis Gen is an example. I think they're probably one of the most interesting, kind of most extreme examples of the kind of engineering firm trying to launch like a software sales business. They've got an app marketplace and all this stuff, which is it's really interesting stuff. But if you look at, I was just kind of looking over their annual report, and Arcadis Gen is still from a, you know, they don't break out revenues, but from a headcount perspective, Arcadis Gen is like 1% of Arcadis's total workforce globally, right? Like it's still such a small piece of the business that as much as it's being, you know, obviously marketed and promoted significantly because it is this kind of new, you know, major kind of strategic initiative, it's still way too soon to say how quickly it's going to scale and how successful they're going to be. And I think it's going to take time to get off the ground. So that's maybe one thing I would say is that, you know, it's really hard to say. And especially then on the other side of the equation, those companies that are really kind of embedding their digital capabilities, embedding their IP into their core services, there's no real, you know, I think accounting for that is really tricky from a from a revenue perspective, from a growth perspective, because again, if you're giving away the software for free to sell more on-call services contracts or to sell more engineering and design projects, it's really hard to say exactly what the value is of, or what revenue is going to be associated with that software product that you've developed, right? So it's very hazy, it's very fuzzy, and we're still trying to figure out a good way to get a read on that. But I think it's interesting to continue to watch. So that's one thing I would say. The other thing that I think is really interesting is just like who else is moving into the services space that could potentially be competing with engineering firms in this sense. And so certainly we've seen technology companies also trying to push more into services to, you know, have a little bit more control over the value chain in terms of, you know, the players that are, you know, doing implementation services for the software that they're selling and helping drive business that way. Bentley comes to mind as really an interesting example there, because over the past couple of years, they've actually been kind of standing up, investing in, acquiring a bunch of specialist integrators that work in kind of the asset management integration, software integration space, or they do a lot of digital twin type work. You know, that's obviously part of their brand. So technology companies actually kind of pushing back and trying to get, I shouldn't say pushing back because I don't think they necessarily see themselves as competitive, but you know, moving into that services landscape and potentially you know, offering kind of some competition to the engineering firms. We've also seen even some of the big like accounting firms, you know, KPMG has been developing some interesting water utility software. And, you know, I think they're kind of a out of left field player that might be competing in some cases with some of the engineering firms that we talk about, although certainly not nearly as focused on water as many of the firms that we've looked at so far. But so I think that'll be interesting just to see how that competitive landscape evolves. I mean, certainly there'll continue to be consolidation within the engineering firm space. I think there always has been. And I do think that, you know, we may see more and more of it over time reflect that focus on adding digital capabilities. But yeah, I guess my short answer is it's hard to say. It's too soon to say. This is certainly a direction that these players are going. I think they all realize that they need to figure out a strategy now or it's going to be too late. Because this is kind of a movement that's happening in the industry. But the question is, you know, what strategy is going to be the most effective? What types of applications are going to be the most successful? And how can they kind of best leverage their existing talent, their existing relationships to kind of make the biggest mark in this industry?
And I would also, no, that's fantastic. And I think one question or one point to be made, maybe this is a good way to sort of put a bow on it, is much like the global digital water forecast that we released early in the summer, relative this report that we're about to release relative to the 2020 edition has more global companies in it. We've sort of gone a bit further afield. It includes companies like WSP and Wood and Royal Haskoning. I can't remember if they're in the last one, RSK you mentioned with through Benny's. So there are other players beyond just the US. This is more global focus, at least of these 20 key players.
Yeah, we looked at Rambo. We looked at Envidon, which is a Scandinavian player. We looked at Suico. So we've got a couple more names in here. And, you know, I think it should be a good synopsis of what some of the most important players are doing in this space for sure.
I mean, it's also interesting. I don't know this, so don't want to ambush you on this, but it was WSP that acquired Wood's actually water business or part of their business a couple months ago. And they sort of lose track of time, but I don't know if that has any impact, but with both their names on there on our list, it's something to consider as well. So there's change happening everywhere. All right. Well, Eric, thanks a million. I mean, it's hard enough to pin you down. So I know it, 4 o'clock on a Thursday, I was able to do it between calls. So thanks a million for your help. And I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Yeah, sounds good, Reese. Thanks again.
All right, take care.
Talk to you soon.
All right, that was fantastic. I told you Eric has tons of information on the digital water sector, not only the markets, the trends, the forecasts, but also key players and what they're doing in the market. So thanks again to him. Big shout out. Before we sign off, I just want to add one more thing to my typical list. If you're in the Boston area, let us know. We can set up a meeting. We got a new location, new office. It's fancy smancy. So feel free to come by. We're 10 minutes from the airport, 10 minutes from the main train station. We're right downtown. So we look forward to seeing you when you swing by. Secondly, please subscribe to the Future of Water podcast and give us a review. It helps us. It really does. It helps us get more listeners. It also helps us get a better understanding of who's listening and to what they're listening to. Thirdly, send us a note at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com with any topic ideas you would like us to discuss. We're doing this for you, not us. And lastly, tell a friend about it. It's always good to reach out. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Until we talk again, be well, be safe, and take care.